For the brief presentation. Any question, honorable members? This correction on the Sambi, financial statement. The change of the root cause. How often do you normally do this? Change your report?
Chief, that's something that we do often, but it's something that Sandy brought to our attention. It's not changing the audit report. The audit report is exactly the same. When we come to you and we present, we try to assess what were some of the reasons as to why this happened. And that's where the subjectivity comes in terms of interpretation of why did they have material corrections to the financial statements. Our audit report has not changed. It's just a message to you that we came and gave to you when we met with you. We're saying that that needs to change, and that's why we're tabling it again, just to say, or to correct it, to make sure that we get to the correct report.
Yeah, I'll come to Honorable Khadev. You see, I don't have the records here of that you presented to us, but how it was presented was properly motivated and in our view justified, because the point that was being made was that the reason why there was material changes to the financial statement was because there was not sufficient competency in the unit, in the finance unit. It's not a matter that you only raised, we also picked it up when we received the presentation, where they could not answer certain questions which for me they were basic. That's why the portfolio committee, we tended to agree with the point that was made by the Auditor General. But now you are changing. And this change, I don't know what motivate or justify this, because your initial point was actually spot on, according to us. So I don't know how you then justify this one.
Chair, the audit of Sandy is done by a Western Cape team. Sandy has raised a concern regarding the presentation that is made, and they disagreed with our team in the provinces, and our team in the province had then told us that it's actually the flow response to the findings that is the root cause.
So you as a manager, you are not satisfied yourself that it is not indeed what you said it is the last time. Just rely on the provincial team.
Chair, that's our process, but I think they're closer to the issue. They've issued the audit report, so therefore we do place reliance on what they say, and I'm not sure on how the competency was actually arrived at. So, if you want us to take it back to them, we can do that.
See, I don't want your reports now to be under question. Because what you are doing now, you want us to take your report with a bit of suspicion. Because you can't just change because somebody else has raised the query. You must have satisfied yourself that what you said is not what is obtaining. And therefore you are changing. Because I'm telling you that as a committee we met, we received a presentation on the annual report, and what came out of the Q&A session when you asked questions was that we were actually convinced that you are right as the Auditor General on the question of competence, particularly in the finance unit. So now you are making a U-turn, you are changing, and you are not even justifying your change. We must just take your weight or the weight of the provincial team. I don't think that is acceptable. It's not acceptable at all. Honorable Khader.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. Sorry to be late. It won't happen again, I hope. Chairperson, I don't want to labor on the same point you've just raised, because I just flagged it immediately when I came in, when the presentation was given. But the other issue that I would like to raise, Chairperson, is the issue of the implementation of the MCS. Have the department as well as the audit office come to a common ground in as far as the implementation of the modified cash standards? That's what I would like to hear, because we don't want to have a similar problem in this financial year where the minister will be delayed because you're having these discrepancies where you don't agree on the implementation of the MCS. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you,
Dr.
McCoy.
Chair, thanks. A similar point to the latter point raised by Honorable Adam. I seem to have a different understanding now, unless if it's further clarified to us. What I've understood the department to be saying earlier on was that they have always been accounting for these transferred funds to the agents as they used to do, as transfers, which was not necessarily recognized by the MSC. What is that? MCS. And now what the AGSA is saying is that the department has since amended all that in line with the new standards. Is that the case, or the department reverted to its initial accounting ways, and that was finally understood by everybody, or the department actually shifted to the new standards, accounting standards? Because these are two different things, and we must get clarity in that. I think there's a contradiction in my view. I had not understood it that way, finally, when we spoke to the department, and in terms of the way forward, which were requested by the AG's office to ensure that it happens, the department accounts in that manner, in terms of the proposed way forward. So let's just get that clear from yourselves in particular, so that we know what way forward is it that we are talking about. Because on where you highlighting the delay, sorry, Chato, okay, slide 9, the last but one bullet says that the department now complies with the requirement of the MCS. And that is the way forward that we should be taking. And I thought it's not necessarily the case, it's the other way around. So may we get that. Fortunately, in the department, it's here. We can get both to clarify this point. Thanks.
All right,
AG.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we have had several discussions, I think, since the initial audit opinion was issued. The strategy was involved in that process as well. So we have come to an agreement on the way forward. In terms of that, the department has adjusted the way that it accounts for these implementing agents to reflect the underlying substance of the of those transactions. So yes, there has been a change in respect of that. There has been subsequent discussions again with National Treasury, and our understanding is that we've agreed on the way forward, and that the department will also comment on that as well. Chair, I think that answers the question, and if you'd like to ask the department for their views as well.
The question was for Honorable Khader. Are you now happy that there's not going to be any delay?
Chair, I think the department will now continue to look at its processes and systems. We think that that the department is understanding the way that it should continue going forward, so we don't anticipate that there will be a delay with the next one.
So basically, they've amended the statements to be as you wanted them to be. And then you then audited them.
Okay.
Remember, the initial audit was qualified. Yes, and now this one is an unqualified.
Chair, there were adjustments that were
yes.
made to the financial statements.
Yes.
The adjustments were then audited to arrive at the new opinion.
Yeah, you see, you must explain to the committee so that you understand. Don't provide very brief answers that does not assist us. When you say there were adjustments, okay, so adjustment. I'm saying there was the first audit was qualified, and then after, because of MCS, and then after that, they then complied with your how it's supposed to be done according to your requirements.
Yes,
or the
Chair.
Requirements of Treasury.
Chair, there were adjustments that were made to account for those transfer payments, or
okay.
the payments or those transfers that were made to reflect the underlying substance. So it was taken out of transfer payments, put into goods and services, and where necessary, then the assets and the liabilities were amended to comply with the requirements of the modified cash standard. So those adjustments were made, and then we reviewed those adjustments before we issued the opinion that we did.
Okay. Because I wanted you to also answer Honorable Makube, because his understanding was that you had to review your audit. You were the ones who were not complying. We must get an understanding as where were the bottlenecks, how were they addressed. Going forward, I'm sure the department knows how to prepare the financial statements, and then there's not going to be a delay. Because this delay has cost us. We were supposed to have debated the department's report under BRRR last year. We didn't do it because it was not ready. So, but I think now honorable members then have an understanding that where the delays, and hopefully the department also, when they prepare their financial statements, they will have to do it in compliance with what the AG requested, the MCS, and how you did it last time. You don't understand, teaching.
Well, Chair, I think firstly Parliament must acknowledge that the appropriation happens here. The funds are appropriated as transfer payments by Parliament. And there are treasury rules that apply, which is where the technicality around what exactly pertains in respect of MCS. And I must report to the committee that yes, we've had meetings before and even subsequently. Recall that this matter we've been in discussions with the Treasury and the Auditor General even before the financial statements were prepared. And there was correspondence that we received, was it in March last year, that was talking about exemption from Treasury. And the AG did not accept that exemption, firstly, okay, because they were saying that still the rules are made by Treasury. Treasury must then not issue exemptions. They must rather either modify or revise their rules. So the AG refused to then accept the exemption. And we're already in the audit process, and we had already prepared our financial statements. Today, I must say, I'm still awaiting a letter from Treasury. After the meeting, if you remember, Jolene, the Treasury, the AG actually can explain what the real difference is. They say we are too involved. Is that the language? They say we are too involved in controlling the project implementation. When it's transfer payments, we should be hands off, in essence. So then the department is asking, in terms of the Treasury regulation, and I can't now, I can quote, CFO can quote, will you transfer, but you still have to satisfy yourself that there are adequate controls in respect of the use of the funds that you transfer. So to us, when we say adequate, as an accounting officer, whenever there is something that is picked up, we want more and more controls to be put in place or effected during project implementation. So now the choice that I was given as an accounting officer in the meeting, and I think the CFO can confirm, was either we use our transfer payments, we do transfer payments, but we do it as conditional grants. Is it conditional? Conditional, so that we don't have to then be as involved as we are. And the second option is either that it's not then appropriated as transfers, it's appropriated as goods and services. So we still don't have it in writing because I wanted to know exactly how does it work.
But how was the financial statements prepared?
There was an agreement which we can show what the shifts in the presentation of the CFO. You will see exactly where the shifts were done in agreement with the Auditor General. So we understand the AG's concern, but at the same time, we also understand the objectives of these programs. There are certain rules that were undertaken upfront when these programs were set up, the public employment programs. The accounting standard that is new did not take those into account. For example, honorable members, I made this example. When it comes to the Department of Labor laws, the public employment programs are not compliant with the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, because the way the programs are designed, they are designed to deal with people that are unemployed, offer them experiential learning and training so that they can then navigate the labor market. So one of the rules that apply then to this program, we should not attract people that are already in the labor market. So even what we pay is below what is normally paid by the various sectors and various industries. So we have a ministerial determination that talks to that. In the case of MCS, what then was desirable in the discussions that we had earlier with Treasury, we understood that they were then going to either look at a dispensation or what is called a ministerial determination that says this is then how you treat this in light of the fact that it is not the same as good. I am still saying I do not, we government, when they say that there is benefits that you derive from the use of the funds, we will always have an interest. Government has an interest in unemployment, in dealing with the unemployment. So if that is how it is defined financially, it is not the same as what it means when you actually have to operate these programs. So the assets that are created here at, say, Cape Nature here in the Western Cape get the money. They must do the implementation of the project to fence their protected area in a labor-intensive fashion. But that asset is not for Deer, it is for Cape Nature. So if you say those assets, then we derive value at the time of even during implementation. Accounting-wise, it means something else, but from an outcome point of view, it means something else. So it is still a very difficult formulation. So with the changes that were done, to me, I'm sorry to say this again, they are too cosmetic to really say something about the actual implementation of modified case standards. So firstly, Parliament appropriates transfers, but now when we implement, we then need to report. So that part has been clarified to us that we can report differently, not in accordance with the appropriation. So as Parliament, when you then see the financial statements, you'll see that we have moved things that were under transfer when you were appropriating our budget to now appear under goods and services. That is what the effect of the change has been. Thanks.
AG, you want to comment? I'll take questions from the members?
Chair, I think we don't disagree with what the DG says. I think there has been a process and that the department is now trying to make sure that they get it right with the next audit. But yeah, I think that there's still some discussions that will still need to take place.
Yeah, but you see, there's fundamental differences. She says they would like to account it under transfer payments, and you are comfortable being accounted for under goods and services, and which is something that they've done the changes, but they're still not happy. Can you comment? Sorry, I forgot the name. Tesh, yeah.
Yes, I think we look at it, we can see that there's actually 22 targets that the department reports on in the annual performance report. And if you look at it, those 22 targets are actually linked to the transfer payments that the department makes. So what we essentially are saying is, when they're delivering on their mandate, they're actually receiving a benefit because these payments are actually helping them to achieve what they need to report on the mandate. So that is why we say they're not actually unrequited as such. Unrequited means that they get nothing in return for these transfer payments. DIA is actually fulfilling on their mandate when these transfers are being made. So I think what happened here was the AG and National Treasury are in agreement that the way the department was accounting for it was incorrect. The department, however, disagreed with us, and that is what caused the delay on the
financial. And I propose that we schedule a session to then get into this matter between the department and the AG, so that it doesn't bog us down when we discuss the annual report. They've made the changes, the department, but they are still not happy. So I think we must schedule some session during this term with the AG and with Treasury, so that we are then able to get an understanding, because we don't want to be delayed again as a portfolio committee. Remember, if there is a delay in the tabling of the annual report, it also delays our program in terms of the BRRR. So we'll do that. The secretary will find a date and then we'll issue invitations. Hopefully by then you would have discussed with all the relevant stakeholders, and then we will be able to get a solution. Do members agree with my way forward? Is it fine? Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, so we will then do it that way. I must say, AG, I'm not happy with how you've handled the Sunbe issue. Parliament, like all other stakeholders, they place heavy reliance on your reports as the Auditor General. You help us to do our oversight over the department and the entities. Now, if you just chop and change your reports without proper explanation, it gives us a problem, because it goes to the credibility of that report itself. We have utilized your report, we have done our oversight, we have made certain recommendations based on your report. Now you are coming back to say, no, we are changing this one. I don't think it bodes well for your don't want to say credibility, but for the reliability of your reports by Parliament and your reputation as well. Remember, Auditor General is a very reputable institution, but if you want to do this now as a committee, you're going to have a problem. Unless if you motivate why you're changing your reports, like you have motivated with the department. It was around accounting using modified cash standards, which is something that we accept. But when you do certain changes and you don't explain, it becomes a problem to us. Please go and look at that and then come back to us on this issue. Agreed?
Okay, noted and agreed.
All right. Can we then get the department, I don't know who's going to present.
The presentation will be done by all the DDGs are here who account for each program. The COO will start with program one, and then Isham program two, Dr. Maiki, so program three, and then program four, it's Judy Beaumont, and program five, Johnny, and then program six is Dr. Preston, and program seven is Mark Gordon. So I would immediately just hand over, and I'll deal with the questions and thanks.
Thank you, DG. Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I will quickly run through annual report progress for Program 1. And in that program, I will start with an objective around equitable and sound corporate governance. In that regard, we're looking at compliance with statutory tabling and prescripts, where we've met our target and we're compliant in terms of the annual report. The audit opinion, which we've just got from AG, also that the department received an unqualified audit report. The other area which we did not fully meet the target, with 94% of the target, was around adherence to cabinet and cluster schedule. There were three meetings in that whole year that were missed, and these meetings were missed in the first quarter. So if you missed it in the first quarter, even though we implemented corrective measures and corrected it going forward and attended, ensured that we attended all meetings, it still reflects that there were those three meetings that we missed. And the reason for missing those meetings in the main were due to clashes and last minute changes to the cabinet and cluster protocol, because we normally have standing representatives for those meetings. So when those representatives were not available, then those meetings were then missed, because they don't just allow anyone to go. But we then had a process where we then submitted names of alternatives for those meetings, so that we could then cater for that challenge. In terms of our expenditure, we're at 99.9% expenditure. In terms of contributing to Triple B on our affirmative procurement, we 75% of our budget was spent on Triple B organizations. When we're looking at raising funds, or what we call value-focused funding or resourcing for our priorities, we looked at the total value of resources that were raised using our donors or any partnerships that we have, and the total value was 88 million. Some of these is not hard cash. It comes in terms of services that we are then offered by the donors. We also have a project in terms of our transfrontier conservation areas, where we then promote investments in some of these areas. We normally then have a cut and look, which then provides investment opportunities that are there. And our intention was to have at least one project in that cut and look funded for the year, and we're able to then achieve those targets. The other target was around the biodiversity sector financing model, which we needed to then develop in that year. To do this work, we needed to utilize some of the funds that we got from our donors, the United Nations Development Program, and there were delays in accessing the funds while the funds were there. I think we reflected on these challenges in the previous quarters as we were reporting, members, that we have had challenges in terms of now finalizing the contracts and ensuring that the money is transferred. So there were delays in that regard. However, this work has then now continued in this financial year, and we should be able to conclude on that. In terms of now the internal matters around adequate, appropriately skilled and transformed or in diverse workforce, we're looking at our vacancy rate there, and we're happy to indicate that we have exceeded our target in that regard, and we have a very low turnover rate.
In terms of performance management framework, our intention was to have 95%. The reason we normally look at 95% is there would be people that just join and they still are within the grace period to have their contracts finalized, or there are other challenges in terms of finalizing assessments. But in this regard, we've also been able to exceed our targets. We have exceeded. We have also met our targets in terms of human resource development within the department, which looks at interns that we then recruit, the bursaries that we issue, and also our own internal workplace skills plan that we need to implement. On attaining our employment equity targets, we have met the target on women in general, but we continue to struggle, as has been the case with women in SMS. And honorable members, I just want to add that this seems like it will be a continuing challenge that we will have, made worse now by the budget cuts that we have, and also the cap on the number of people that we may have in the organization, because it means if in some instances when vacancies arise, we will not be able to fill those vacancies, as we have to abolish some posts or cut the headcount in the department. So we will continue to have a problem in this area, but we'll keep trying to see what we can do in terms of the senior managers, the women in senior management. We've met our targets in terms of black people, and in terms of people with disabilities, we have met the target there. I do recall that in the previous sitting, members wanted to understand the levels of the people with disabilities, and we have the statistics on that. We have three people in senior management, which is like chief director and director level. We have 9 people in middle management, and we have about 32 people in the rest of the organization. So that is the breakdown of people with disabilities. In terms of now ensuring that we have harmonious and conducive working environment and are managing our labor relations well, we have met the target or even exceeded the target in dealing with misconduct cases. We have struggled a bit on the grievances, and I think the main challenge with grievances is we've had people lodging grievances, but when they have to come and substantiate and we've scheduled the meetings, then they are not available, and there's those delays, and they don't have representatives for the grievances that they have, and then there's been a bit of a delay in finalizing those cases, but we continue to monitor that and work on those. The other area where we didn't fully meet our target was in terms of the security risk assessment recommendations. Most of the recommendations that came, they are related to the head office building, which is managed as a PPP arrangement. So we do have a private party that has to then implement most of this of these items that were there. And I think for about a period of 2 years, we've had items that were disputed in terms of where we're saying you need to then implement these as part of the contract, and there will seem to be interpretation issues. But I'm also happy to report that at the moment we have now resolved most of these issues that were in that snake list, and most of the issues that were reflected here as the security recommendation risks were part of that. So we should be able to then resolve all those. I'm moving on to the next area. Chair, I'm trying to focus in the main on the areas where we did not meet the targets. And the other area where we didn't fully meet the target was on the master systems plan, where we had 6 initiatives that we planned to implement, and we only implemented 4 of those 6 projects. I just want to then reflect on what are the 2, so that we can look at what was the impact of not implementing these 2. In the main, one was around infrastructure upgrade. So it didn't really compromise our ability to deliver on the services. There was still existing infrastructure, but because we wanted to upgrade, and when we realized that we have financial constraints, we then decided to reprioritize that project and continue with it in this financial year. So it didn't really have much impact in terms of delivery of our services. The other area was around a system. We wanted to develop a system to integrate contract management in the department. So we still had systems, contract management systems, that were running in different units. So in this regard as well. This was around improving efficiencies. So as we reprioritized, we said this project we can then defer to a later stage, but it has now since been finalized in this financial year. Then in terms of availability of our systems, we've met our targets and resolving the requests that we get. These are all internally focused. In terms of now improving the profile, support and capacity for the environment sector, which talks to the media statements or opinion pieces that we issue just to ensure that we improve access to information about the department. We have met our targets in terms of that. We have also hosted public participation events. We have stakeholder publications which we call the Environmental Quarterly, and in the main here our target audience would be Parliament, industry partners and the general public, and we then have exhibitions where we then would distribute these publications. We have information sections that we have them. We also distribute these at provincial and municipal offices. This is over and above having them in our website. So we have met our targets in that regard as well. Moving on to educational or environmental awareness activities that we have, we look at teachers' training and also looking at unemployed youth that we then recruit in this area, and environmental awareness campaigns. In all these areas, we have met and exceeded the targets. We also have a focus in ensuring that the sector skills plans have an environmental focus, and we have been able to go and confirm that the 12 sector skills plans still do have that. The other area is around integrated environmental management training sessions that we conduct, and the intention is to conduct 4 sessions, and we were able to conduct 8 sessions in that financial year. We also had a target around municipal officials or councillors that were trained on waste management. You would see that in that regard as well, we would have exceeded our target. And I think here one of the reasons which would link to the indicator below is that we ended up training more officials than we anticipated. You would recall that this is the year that we also had elections, and we then our training requirements then increased. In terms of the local government support strategy, this is basically where as a department we then go to the different provinces and municipalities to then support them in implementation of environmental priorities. And in the main, we look at trainings. We have fora that we then engage on environmental issues. We had challenges on a number of foras that we could not convene, once again due to the elections and availability of our stakeholders in that regard. So we're not able to then implement some of these things. The other area that we couldn't do in this regard was around municipal profiles that we wanted to finalize due to now also new councillors in some areas and orientation needing to happen. We couldn't then finalize those profiles, but we finalized the frameworks and we've done the sensitization, and we should be able to then finalize those profiles in this financial year. In terms of sector monitoring and evaluation, our intention for that year was to finalize an external evaluation study report and have recommendations on that one. And for this work, we wanted to then get a service provider. The reason we wanted to get a service provider is, you would understand, this is evaluation of our own projects. So we couldn't be player and referee in this regard. We needed to get someone with the right competencies to go and evaluate the impact of our projects outside. We had challenges with the service provider that we had appointed, and these challenges came late in the course of the year, I think around the third quarter, that they were not able to deliver, and we had to cancel the contract, and we had to then follow, I think at that time Treasury had also introduced a process, a longer process in appointing service providers as single source. I think that's why we're emphasizing the fact that we had to get Human Science Research Council as a single source, because that in itself led to delays, because then the approval had to be granted through Treasury, and we only got the approval right at the end of the financial year, so we couldn't then deliver on that. In terms of the other areas on sector monitoring, the department is the coordinator for Outcome 10, and we then monitored and ensured that all reports were done there. We also then did our work in terms of developing indicators for policymakers in terms of the outlook that we have. We have quarterly early warning, yes, I wanted to early warning or scanning of the environment to try and understand what are the threats and what are the opportunities that then exist in the sector, and we're able to do that and identify the issues and then provide responses for those issues. We also had a responsibility to ensure that we developed South African environmentally sustainable development indicators that we had to publish, and this was then finalized in the financial year. When we look at strengthening our knowledge, science and policy interface, our intention was to ensure that the sector has an evidence policy interface system in place. This in this financial year looked at development of a chain strategy and research and development and evidence framework, and we managed to develop that. We also wanted to look at a research project that we commissioned for environmental sustainability, and that was then done. Moving forward to knowledge and information management for the sector, there were a number of systems that we needed to look at. Firstly, the National Ocean and Coastal Information Management System, which we have finalized the requirements and actual architectural design for it as per plan. The National Climate Change Response MNE System, that we needed to then develop and also start implementing. We have been able to then meet our targets in this regard in terms of the development phase of it for this financial year. And also in terms of the GIS, internal and external platforms, that it was mainly around the maintenance of these platforms in that year, and we were able to do that. The other area that we wanted to look at was the special tools, the pre-screening tool that we needed to develop in that financial year. We started with the development, we developed the framework for that, and we then have appointed a service provider to finalize the development of that tool, and that was not finalized by the end of the financial year. Yes, but we should be able to finalize that now in the first quarter of this financial year. I think, Chair, on the other systems that we're looking at, we've met our targets in all those other systems that we were then developing there. In terms of our international cooperation work, where we're looking at positions and negotiating positions that we then needed to develop and negotiate on and report on, we did the two climate change positions that we were planning to do, the four biodiversity positions, which was mainly around the World Heritage Convention, Ramsar, the UN, I want the full thing now, the Convention on UNCCD, Combat Certification, that we then did. There were also chemicals and waste positions that we wanted to develop. We had planned to develop five. We ended up developing seven positions for that financial year. In terms of all our bilateral engagements that we plan to do, we exceeded targets in that regard, which then is a demonstration that the year, in that year, it was a rather busy year in terms of our negotiations and the engagements that we then had. So all the targets in those regards were then exceeded. I think for CITES COP 17 was hosted successfully, and with all members having been part of that, so we met the target in terms of that as well. We also have a target around ensuring that all mandatory international reports are submitted within time frame, and all our reports, including the NEMA reports, the third national communication report, the draft that was supposed to be done, the biannual update was also done. So we've also met our commitments in terms of reporting in that regard. So overall performance for program one, out of the 67 targets, 58 were fully achieved, and with some of them being exceeded, which demonstrated 87%. And we have 8 targets which I spoke to where the targets were slightly missed, and one, which is that external report where we say we were totally off target, we didn't meet the target. Just to explain, partially achieved means more than 80% of the work would have been done, while the one with less than 50% of the work being done would then reflect as a rate. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, members. I'm going to be presenting on the legal authorizations, compliance and enforcement part of the department's work. You'll see there, Chair, we've met most of the targets, and I think I'll just talk to the two in the first slide, the two issues that are anomalies there. And that's the first one, the percentage of administrative enforcement actions that result in compliance. You'll see there we've got 75%, where the target is actually 80% for the year. This is a bit of a difficult target in the sense that the requirement for compliance actually comes from the people that we're issuing the compliance notices to. So it's a bit complicated in the sense that we may issue a compliance notice, but there's several compliance issues within one notice that need to be taken care of. For example, they may need to submit a report, and that report may need to further compliance. So that's the difficulty with monitoring and enforcing the compliance notices. So what we've decided in terms of that is we've actually got we've developed an electronic system to track it. And Chair, we'd trying to improve the system in terms of how we actually get the sector to comply. So we've almost broken down the compliance efforts in the specific compliance notices so we can actually get better compliance. And in some instances, we've actually looked at alternative ways of ensuring compliance. For example, we're now issuing warning letters instead of a pre-compliance notice. So sometimes we get compliance just on the warning letter. So those are some of the issues, and we'd be happy to present to the committee if needs be to elaborate on exactly what we've done and what it entails, because it is quite complicated and a bit difficult to understand just talking to it from this perspective. The second thing, Chair, is you'll see that the number of officials trained, we had a target of 280. We've actually managed to train 630 officials. So the thing there is that we came into some money from the Global Environmental Facility. That's the one reason why we've managed to actually train so many officials as opposed to the target. The second thing is that also the Department of Justice indicated to us that for them it's very difficult to release their officials, particularly prosecutors and magistrates. So what happened was they actually arranged for us to have those people for a specific period so that we could actually train as many people as possible, and that's the reason why the target's been exceeded by such a substantial amount. Okay, then in terms of the number of interventions implemented in support of the integrated strategic management of rhino populations, I'll ask our DDG Shawnee to elaborate there, but there also we've met the targets. All the joint law enforcement collaborations have been coordinated. There's a wildlife information system, that framework that's been developed, and also the impacts of rhino poaching and opportunities for the development of wildlife economies has been conducted, and that report has been submitted to the minister. Then, Chair, in terms of the number of interventions for streamlining environmental authorization, we've got the instrument regulations that are being processed for gazetting, and they have been developed and they've been approved by MINMEC. Then we're also busy with NEMA and the specific Environmental Management Act law reform concept document. then output for the strategic infrastructure projects 8, wind and solar has been developed and is being processed for gazetting. The exception listing notice has been developed, and then also in terms of our 24H regulations, these have been finalized and submitted to the Minister for gazetting for implementation. As far as the interventions for streamlining the environmental authorizations and management has been developed, there's a shale gas strategic environmental assessment. There we've had two stakeholder engagements, and then also in terms of the development of a draft sensitivity map for the aquaculture strategic environmental assessment, there's been an inception meeting with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and it's our sister department that we're actually working with in the development, and it's a joint initiative, and that's a bit of a challenge for us because it's not entirely under our control. So the required consultation to agree to the terms of reference has apparently been conducted, and the project is currently underway. There is a final strategic environmental assessment document for the SIP 8 wind and solar that's available. Also in terms of the SIP 10, the electricity transmission final corridors have been identified as well. These are obviously to facilitate environmental impact assessments and to make it easier for that process to take place. If there's a strategic corridor that's identified, we don't need to necessarily go into all the reports for the environmental impact for specific sites. We can then focus on specialist issues around specific sites. The draft of the site protocol for the SA and the SKA has also been prepared. Apparently they've had some challenges there as well, but it's anticipated that the draft protocol would be available in July 2016. Then in terms of the interventions for streamlining environmental authorizations, the terms of reference for phase 2 of the SIP 8 has been approved for wind and solar. SIP 19, the strategic infrastructure project for environment, the draft terms of reference were apparently developed. It hasn't been approved yet. The corrective measure there is that there's consultation work that needs to be that's required on the revised terms of reference, and apparently that work has been undertaken, and it will be finalized in the early part of 2017, I'm assuming. In terms of the number of environmental sustainability policies that have been reviewed, the policy action plan has been developed in this regard. Chair, in terms of the overall summary of the program, 88% has been achieved, 14 of the 16,000.
Can you leave the things that we can be able to make sense of, and then
sure.
Let's move to another one.
Sure, Chair.
I want us to move a bit quicker.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair and honourable members. I'm going to present on Program 3, Oceans and Coasts, and the first performance indicator involves the National Coastal Management Program interventions implemented. And these have been implemented, Chair. Situation analysis was done and reported on, and the draft national standards developed. Setback lines is quite a controversial issue, Chair, because it means the department or government would be telling industry and municipalities how close they can build to the ocean. Then there was the second one is number of priority areas with coastal access, and Chair, we had selected 3 areas as priorities, and surprise, surprise, we had controversy in Saldanha Bay in December, where the municipality had problems with parking in front of a community that is on the water, so to speak, along beach road. And there were complaints because they were issuing passes to residents. which meant if you are not a resident, you couldn't get into the area. And this, then our minister wrote a letter to the mayor to indicate that the Coastal Management Act didn't allow prevention of access to the ocean, and the department worked together with the municipality to improve the communication such that the problems were solved. And it was, in our view, simply a communications problem. Then, Chair, there was a national review of a coastal effluent disposal, and that was achieved. And you may recall that this is work we previously did with the Department of Water Affairs. Then we had to develop a draft Antarctica strategy, and Chair, this was achieved. A national framework on spatial planning also was achieved. Then, Chair, if we go to the next one, number of peer review scientific publications, we were supposed to do 20, we were able to do 26, and we were supposed to do certain population estimates. All these were achieved. Still pub counts, and this was achieved. The next one, Chair, we had to do one top predator ecological study per annum involving whales, sharks, and turtles. We are especially proud on what has been achieved on this program or in this research, Chair, because previously we believed that whales would come from Antarctica where they were feeding and just come to breed along the South African coast. And a very young scientist in our unit led a group that discovered that, in fact, when these whales came to the South African coast, they migrated along the west coast and go offshore and have a feeding frenzy. It's the first time that has been described for whales in this part of the world. Then, Chair, the National Plankton Monitoring Protocol, we did have a discussion on this last time. This has been achieved. And then the terms of reference for study of MPA effectiveness of MPAs has been finalized. And then one survey of the new priority habitat in two areas resurveyed. Chair, just a quick comment here. The South African EEZ has not been systematically studied. The information that we have on the South African EEZ has come from fishing boats, from fishing. What we have been doing now is to track where MPAs are and study the biodiversity in those areas. So it was fishing information or ecological information that was obtained from fishing operations. Now we're taking deliberate assessment, but we're beginning with MPA areas. The next one, Chair, is Ocean and Coast Research Survey and Monitoring Project and three moorings or observation equipment have been deployed against what we see, along what we say is Samba. Chair, the way I remember this is to just take the SA to say that's South Atlantic. So that observation line is in the South Atlantic. Then the other one, which is called ASCA, I take the first A even there and say that is in the Agalas, which is along the east coast. So we've got observation lines along the east coast and also west coast, so to speak, in the Atlantic. These are important. The first one, because they tell us something about the reaction of the ocean to climate change. And the second one tells us about how severe the winter may be in places like the USA and Europe. The estuary management plans that were supposed to develop, that has been achieved, Chair, and the percentage of exclusive economic zone under marine protected areas, we have been able to maintain that as we have planned. The challenge will be in this financial year where we deal with the 22 PAGISA MPAs. Then last, Chair, the State of the Ocean Report on Oceans has been published, or we're supposed to do an annual report card, and that has been done. And then the last one, where we had to develop a national oceans and coast water monitoring program and piloted in Port St. John's. There has been delays with this one, Chair, and it has been partially achieved, and it's just took longer than we expected, especially because we're doing it for the first time and there had been sectoral or fragmented approaches to this, and we're trying to unify things. We're speeding it up during this year, and we hope we'll achieve our targets this year. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm responsible for the Climate Change and Air Quality Management Branch, and which is Program 4, and I will go very quickly through our achievements of last year. The first item is the Climate Change Regulatory Framework. Our target there was for a discussion document to be published. The discussion document at that stage was developed but not in fact published, and we had a series of discussions with the relevant provincial departments and sector departments. We were in fact advised to look at, rather than a bill, to broaden our scope and look at the legal options, the different legal options for putting in place a climate change response regulatory framework. And that is the approach that we are now taking. In terms of the National Framework for Climate Services being finalized, this was achieved. This is work that has been initiated through the World Meteorological Organization. It's about identifying specific climate services and achieving coordination across sector departments and research institutions on providing data and information on those climate services. The Let's Respond Toolkit rolled out to different municipalities, that we have in fact overachieved there. We've achieved the work around putting in place a program to support metros and cities in developing their climate change response plans. We have also achieved the three provincial climate change adaptation response plans for the provinces of Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and the Northwest. We've achieved the first phase of the Carbon Sinks Atlas, and we've also achieved the draft user-friendly greenhouse gas mitigation potential analysis model. The purpose of that model is to enable us within the department to do the mitigation potential analysis ourselves, rather than needing to outsource it as we have in the past. In terms of climate change response policy interventions on mitigation, by the end of last year we had achieved the terms of reference for updating the emission response, the desired emission response objectives. Desired emission reduction objectives, as well as the carbon budgets. We have had carbon budgets allocated to 9 companies by that stage. Right now we're up to 18 companies. The quarterly reports on implementation of green funds had been produced. Our draft national climate change adaptation strategy by the end of last year was developed. That was the draft, and we are working on finalization. And that really sets out to pull together our national approach to adaptation to climate change across sector departments, provinces, and stakeholders. In terms of implementation of sector adaptation plans, there were 5 sectors: agriculture, water, health, rural settlements, and biodiversity. We had achieved implementation or supported implementation in 4 of them. We were slightly behind in terms of what was taking place in the rural settlements sector. On risk analysis, we'd achieved the Free State and Northern Cape. The situation analysis and needs assessment report on adaptation was finalized, and this really is an analysis of the institutional, human resource, and financial resource capacity in provinces for responding to climate change. The National Air Quality Indicator is at 0.79. Partially that is linked to the fact that we have a number of air quality monitoring stations that are not reporting as they should be, and we're working on that. In the next one, you can see that our target was to have 100 government-owned air quality stations reporting to SACWIS. We had overachieved there, but Chair, you will see that in the next item, in terms of meeting a minimum of 80% data recovery, we are very far down. Only 50% of the stations are meeting the data recovery requirements, and those data recovery requirements are absolutely critical to ensure that we're able to report with validity in the state of air report. We now have, we're putting in place a strategy to address the challenges that we are experiencing with the monitoring network. And it's quite a detailed strategy which starts defining the most critical priority areas in which we need to focus the monitoring network. It also starts to address some of the challenges that we've been experiencing in terms of the owners of those monitoring stations not allocating sufficient budget for maintenance of the stations. We're in the process of presenting that strategy to the MINTEC working groups and MINTEC, and would then welcome an opportunity to present to the portfolio committee. In terms of 50%, a target of 50% of facilities with atmospheric emission licenses reporting to the National Atmospheric Emission Inventory System, we overachieved there with 68% of the registered facilities reporting to NEIS, and we're proud of that achievement. It's a rolling process in which we are increasing the numbers of registered facilities reporting to the NEIS. We achieved the small-scale charcoal plants being declared as controlled emissors, and the annual plans of the priority areas having been implemented. We were underachieving in our annual climate change response monitoring and evaluation report. By that stage, the annual report had been finalized, the chapters had been finalized, but it was not yet published. The report is now published, and we presented it to members, and in fact, I think we circulated copies last year during the colloquium. And our last item was the 2000 to 2012 greenhouse gas inventory. We achieved the first order draft having been finalised. Thank you, Honourable Members and Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. I'll be talking to Biodiversity and Conservation in terms of the deliverables in the financial year in question. The first issue is the land under conservation. On an annual basis, there's an increase of 0.5% that we target, and we had achieved that for that financial year. And also, when it comes to other forms of protected environments that are added into the portfolio of protected areas, there's a focus on stewardship sites. This is one area that has always been a challenge. We have looked at what the challenges is and also measures to deal with this in ensuing years. But on this particular financial year, there was a site, stewardship site that was supposed to be added into the portfolio. Everything was done according to the plan. Unfortunately, towards the end of the financial year, there were some parties, private parties, that pulled out of the process. There are a lot of dependencies, especially on this one in particular, because you deal with private land owners who would have to agree and in a contractual arrangement to be part of a protected area or a protected environment with specific conditions. So that has been the issue for that particular area, which is part of the Agalas area, which we continue to pursue in partnership with Sunparks.
and also looking at the issues that the landowners had raised. When it comes to management effectiveness, we've got some form of, even if we don't call it audit, but it's some form of audit that looks at how management authorities are performing and provincial authorities are performing when it comes to the management of protected areas, following a particular model, and it's got better measurements that that would give a figure and a rating and also evidence of improvement in that particular area. So we did well in this. We needed 87% of these areas to score above 67% in terms of what we call the international MET score, which we got 92.6 as indicated there. In terms of management of species and protection of species, we had prioritized the African lion for obvious reasons and also white rhino at the time to have management plans for that. This is meant to bring in all the players, including private players, into the management of this species, and that was done. In terms of areas that would bring in community involvement, we looked at a number of issues. One was community-based interventions. We have the People and Parks program. So the resolutions that are derived from the conferences with the I would want to call them landowners need to be implemented, and the implementation is measured. And we had done well on that beyond the target that was set. And also some project-based approaches with some few areas identified. Bushbuck Ridge was one of them, to have a master plan for that and a project unit operational for that area, because it's a biodiversity node very close to Kruger National Park and it was prioritized. So that was done. We needed the biodiversity economy strategy approved to set the process for how best the unlocking of economic potential for biodiversity can be done. That was done and it was approved. The area, one area was nominated for the World Heritage Site, which is what we do on a regular basis to add to the portfolio that we have. And the area that we had a challenge on was the benefit sharing space, the bioprospecting. We targeted that we needed to have 5 benefit sharing agreements concluded, which were concluded, but then when it comes to the approval, we had 1 approved. The other 4, as much as they were concluded following the process that we follow, there were some few issues when it comes to the final analysis of the fairness of the deal. So we needed a better process that needed to deal with these transactions and how the transactions need to be to ensure proper benefits and also fairness when it comes to this. So we were very critical on this to say it's an area that we needed to review and strengthen. Hence, at the end of the financial year, that approval was not concluded. The next area is part of the implementation of the biodiversity economy strategy. There were 10 areas that were set and identified for support through what we call sustainable natural resource-based enterprises. These enterprises needed to be established, and our qualification of establishment involves the business case developed, the concept document, the funding secured, and also setting the enabling framework for the business to be operational, focusing specifically on previously disadvantaged individuals or groups. In this case, only 8 were concluded by the financial year, and then there were 2 that were still not concluded at the time, which then had to be carried over to the following financial year. And the last part was focusing on research. This is not necessarily taking over what SANBI does, but is specific to deal with some issues that we need to respond to from a policy point of view within a very short space of time. So we facilitate that process so that we can answer questions that would inform decision making and also better policy formulation. And we did well in that space. Thank you very much.
Good morning. morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members and colleagues. Going through environmental programs, the first indicator is our full-time equivalents. The target there was 34,824. We achieved 91% that we recorded. The problem that we had principally actually was the verification of data. Our own actual totals were an exceeding of the number, but what could be verified in terms of the requirements of EPWP was 91%. The second one is work opportunities. There it comes here at 126%. Again, our actual figures were higher. The number of accredited days is shown as yellow, but it's 97.4%, so perhaps it should be green. The number of youth benefiting from the YES program, 113%. Number of SMMEs used, we achieved 100% there. The significant problem we had was with the number of school desk equivalents. We achieved 72% of the total that we had. We had a lot of problems with securing dry wood during the year, and I think that was really my principal mistake of trying to achieve more than we were able to, setting targets that were ambitious. The number of buyback centres, we achieved 100% there. Number of overnight visitors, 96%. The climate change flagship program has been dealt with by Judy Beaumont. Number of wetlands, 98%. Number of trees planted, 143%. Number of hectares of land under rehabilitation or restoration, 145%. Number of community parks created or rehabilitated, 96%. Kilometres of coastline that were cleaned, 100%. Environmental monitors trained and deployed in conservation areas, 100%. Number of emerging invasive species targeted for early detection, 123%. Number of sites where biological control agents were released, 128%. Number of initial hectares of invasive alien plants treated, 100%. Number of follow-up hectares of invasive alien plants treated, 109%. Percentage of wildfire suppressed, to a total of 2,000, 100%. The target was 90%. Number of eradication interventions on emerging invasive alien species, 189%. And the number of prioritized non-plant invasive species eradicated, managed, controlled, or contained, 108%. Thank you.
Thank you. TG, good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members, colleagues and observers. I'm dealing with the program Chemicals and Waste Management, with the first indicator there relating to industry waste management plans. The target for the year 15-16 was a review of draft industry waste management plans. That was concluded with comments and inputs made on three of the three prioritized industry plans. Chair, we spent the most part of the year ensuring that the enabling regulatory conditions for the implementation of these plans was done. And with that, we presented a detailed presentation at the previous committee in terms of the alignment package. And it's to do with the publishing of the pricing strategy, which was done, and the passing of a money bill by Treasury, which was concluded late last year with the President ascending to and signing off that money bill. So the regulatory conditions are in place, and these plans now need to align to those in terms of the final call and the final implementation of these plans. The next target was the 25% of waste tires diverted from landfill. This target was exceeded at 42% and verified in terms of waste tires that have been collected and diverted away from landfill sites. The next target is dealing with the licensing of unlicensed landfill sites. My colleague, Michelle Governor, will come back and provide some of the detail dealing with the intergovernmental challenges that we face there, and we'll give you some examples of the work that we've been done to mitigate that. Moving forward on the National Implementation Plan for the Stockholm Convention, which deals with persistent organic pollutants or pesticides, and we were able to submit the updated plan, and that was done in time. Moving on to the PCB program, which is polychlorinated biphenyls, and these are kind of toxic chemicals that are presented that are present in transformer oils that we used to use many years ago in South Africa, mainly with transformers at old power stations and implant and transformer substations at municipalities, and these were phased out, and the department assisted municipality in developing a phase-out plan, and that was concluded. The study on the impact of the Minamata Convention dealing again with the phase-out of mercury, a service provider was appointed and the draft impact study was developed. On the number of waste management facilities audited, we exceeded the target there, and in that year we finalized audits for 16 facilities. Moving on, Chair, to asbestos. Again, my colleague will deal with the detail around the funding challenges we face there and in terms of the status of where we are at the moment with the asbestos program. In terms of the HCFCs, hydrochlorofluorocarbons, and these are the ones that cause the depletion of the ozone layer, we were able to decrease that amount with the ozone hole closing slowly globally, and we were able to meet the target. On the number of jobs created within the waste management sector, we exceeded the target on 685 jobs that we created. And lastly, on the number of SMMEs, we also exceeded the target, well over 20 SMMEs, at sitting at 35. Overall, Chair, our achievement was at 82%. And with the 18% non-compliance, I'm just going to ask Michelle Govan to just provide some detail and examples of some of the intergovernmental challenges there and how we have successfully concluded on that in this current financial year. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to go back to the licensing project. Firstly, to give a brief explanation of why we ended up in the red at that point. Chair, as you would know, prior to the 2014-15 year, we had been running this project for about 3 or 4 years quite successfully and meeting all of the targets. However, in that 2014 year, there were some changes in the regulatory regime, which then resulted in many requirements being placed on projects that required environmental authorization, which the previous legislation did not have. Now, at that stage, the funding for the project and the scope of the licensing project had already been approved. And so with the changes in the legislative regime, we had to go back, change the scope of the work, and then source more funding in order for us to continue. Now, this led to a delay in us actually putting together those reports and submitting it for authorization within that current within that financial year. Since then, we have then looked at all of those challenges. We have had approval of additional funding, and the project will be completed by March this year. There were some other obstacles or challenges in terms of the local municipalities not wanting to sign application forms because of the burden they perceived these authorizations to place on them, because once those authorizations were issued, they needed funding to be able to then put in the necessary infrastructure to ensure that those landfill sites actually operated the way we would want them to operate. But since then, we have had meetings, numerous interventions, and they have all come on board in this regard. Chair and honourable members will recall we did a presentation, an updated one in October last year on this matter. On the asbestos issue, Chair, when the secondary asbestos remediation plan was developed, we had already at that point realized the exorbitant amount of money needed to be able to effectively deal with the asbestos situation in the three major affected provinces in the country. And we had envisaged that the various departments with various responsibilities would come to the party and in cash or kind and help us with this project. Now, that is still an ongoing effort from our side to bring them on board. A lot has been done by the various departments, but funding still remains, or at that stage, funding still remained a constraint. However, we did secure money from the one of the branches within our department to be able to carry out a project.
You see, these long explanations, after having received a very detailed briefing, not helpful at all. Just come up with a summary of why you didn't achieve that, instead of all this long explanation, which I don't really like. TG, can you just summarize it?
Thanks, Chair and Honourable Members. I think the report does outline the challenges, funding and also the procurement processes involved, which then caused the delay with the start of the project. And also the part that we are not certain about is whether secondary asbestos rehabilitation can really be done through labor-intensive processes without exposing those beneficiaries to other possible health impacts. So let me end it at that and then say, Honourable Members, you have received the presentation on all from the performance of the department in respect of all the outcomes and the targets. And those were audited also by the AG. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. There is a report, Honourable Members. I'm sure you have been taking notes. Can we get questions? Honourable Hadeva. No, maybe let's take the finance part before we go to the questions.
Of alien invasives.
That is just the details of, you know, like other operating expenditure. Normally we also want to check what is sitting in other. And you can see the big line there. It's our air charter services for the oceans, for our vessels. And the professional bodies that you are contributing to us. Next slide. And these are just, you know, like the professional bodies underlining the 25 million that you contribute to. Next slide. We don't have a lot of capital assets, and mainly this time it was more computer equipment, and the building is more on rental, so there's not a lot of capital in our building. Next slide. And I think I've explained that one. Next slide. And these are all our transfers to our public entities. We've transferred 100% to all our public entities. We normally transfer on monthly basis, like round about the first or before the seventh. So we transfer 100% of those transfers that are allocated to the next slide. Other agencies, the big other agency that we transfer to is for our green fund, which is DBSA, and there's, you know, like the smaller ones, which is for the Global Environmental Fund, GEF, so we transfer about 60 billion. These are our expanded public works projects that the Auditor General is talking about, working for water, working on fire, and our EPWP projects, you know, mainly all those. And the budget they change is that budget of 2.4 billion or 3 billion. So that's how we transfer. So working for water, 857, on fire, 615, and environmental projects, which are mainly, you know, like the EP projects that we've always had in the department before we joined by Dr. Preston and Dr. Tristan Murray from Water Affairs with these transfers. Next slide. This is the slide that Dicky was talking about. Our goods and services in the department, our own goods and services, is 1.005 billion. Per AG and National Treasury, we are supposed to increase the goods and services of the department to almost 4 billion, 3.5 billion, which means we must take that working for projects and put them as our goods and services per modified case study. And I think the DG has gone to a length, you know, to a greater detail to say that to take all these EPWP projects, their salaries, their wages, their clothing, their whatever, you know, and put it as our goods and services. That is where the challenge is with modified case standards. So it has actually, after, you know, the Auditor General wanted us to restate the financial statement, we had goods and services, 1 billion for the department, then we added working for water, we added working on fire, we added our other environmental projects to come with goods and services of about 3.5 billion. Well, those are just, you know, like the details explained. All these are dates where all these meetings happen. On the, sorry, back, right. That's why we completed our financial statements around about the 2nd of November. All these discussions, and we had our audit committee meetings, and then we were proceeding to have meetings with National Treasury, and also assisted by the chair of the audit committee. We were still writing to National Treasury. Re-modified case standards. And here we're tracking how we pay our invoices. We've paid 27,000 invoices to the value of 5.2 billion below 30 days. So we pay our invoices between 15 and round about December, when it's quiet, I think round about 10 days. And our invoices which are above 30 days are only 9 for the year, totaling about 177,000. And these are just our foreign aid assistance, which is not a lot. Next slide, round about 18-19 million. And we spent about 8 million last year, because these are continuous projects. We carry over the funds and submit the required statements and just implement until the fund is like this. These are public entities. I think I've spoken about them. All transfers are done.
that is just tracking their revenue, how they are performing compared to our grants. And I think that the Auditor General audited and is reported as the public entities reported. We also look at their deficits and surplus and try to understand why we may like surplus.
Thank you. Okay, honorable members, that's the report. Honorable Khadem,
thank you very much, Chair. We will come on the presentation from the department. Chairperson, but I've got one issue which is, I think is worrying me as a member of this portfolio, especially the quality of the financial statements that are sent by the entities to the AG's office for auditing. What is the department is doing to ensure that the quality of the financial statements that go to the AG's office are of adhere to the required accounting standards? That would be my issue, because without we cannot wait, or the department cannot wait until the last day when this issue is picked up by the AG's office, that they seems to be the quality is not of a required standard. Now, please, the department needs to assure us as the portfolio that they are on top of it. They are doing something to ensure that it's not only the AG's office that is gonna at the end of the line be picking up on these issues. We need to get clarity from the department. What is the strategy that they will employ to ensure that the quality that of the statement that go to the office are of required standards. Chairperson, I think I'll stop there for now, then I'll jot down all my other questions because they are mixed.
Okay.
Honorable
Edward.
Thank on the program statement, I'm going to go and write for I've got two questions to start with. It's basically the same on both of the areas that are red. At the corrective measures, it says at the end, first quarter of 2016-17. Shouldn't that thing be 17-18? Or am I being silly? I decided it doesn't make sense if you want to do it in the first quarter because it's already in. Fine. I don't know, maybe. Okay, no. My actual question is on the percentage increase in waste diverted from landfill. Oh, thank you.
See, I haven't been here so long, I forgot the mic. I'm so sorry. And then the other one is the percentage increase in waste diverted from landfill. Can the department maybe just elaborate on the plans and investigations and reports, etc., as to how to increase this at a faster pace, especially after the carte blanche reducer insert. And then the last one is the asbestos. I understand, well, I'm trying to understand the funding issue, but it doesn't make sense that you would target something if you don't think that you can achieve it. So if there's not enough budget in your annual budget, how do you not have funds? I understand. I'm struggling to get it out, but I understand that you want to achieve a target. But shouldn't you then basically set the target as to what you can achieve with your budget? Whatever you overachieve is fine, it's great. But I mean, especially, and I know especially in KZN, if I'm right on this, it's literally becoming a crisis at the moment. Hope I expressed myself right.
Okay, can come in, honourable member.
Thank you, Chair. I have a number of questions. Program one, administration. we speak about the $88 million. We were told it's services, not all cash, but I'd like to know where it's coming from. Where's that fund coming from? The Slane administration, I find that the public participation events, opinion pieces, considering all the environmental problems and concerns we have, those are very low public participation events, in my view, as well as the number of municipalities' official councillors trained on waste management, 284 in the whole country, and the whole country is full of disasters, with lawsuits coming at municipalities. Still in that administration, the National Ocean and Coastal Information Management System developed and implemented. We said we've been told it's finalized. When will that be made public and released? As well as the report on recommendations on possible trade in rhino finalized and approved by Cabinet. Is this public? That report, where is it? At what stage, where is it? The Slane administration, the South African preparations for CITES, COP17, local organizing committee plan for hosting is finalized. When and where will this be held, and who pays, what costs? If we can get more clarity on that one for me, please. Program two, I like the idea of the warning letter before compliance orders. I think that is a good idea. Program two, again, I'd like to know the study on the impact of the rhino poaching. They've been submitted, we were told submitted to the minister, but is it stuck with the minister? Or is it going to be made public? Are these reports going to be made public? This is serious stuff. The still on legal authorizations compliance. We welcome the streamlining of authorizations, because the quicker the seasons are needed all around by everybody. There's nothing more frustrating for investors and whoever waiting a long time for environmental impact assessment decisions. Just bear with me. The setback lines, that's Ocean and Coasts Program 3. The final draft, another final draft developed, but again, causing a lot of frustration for municipalities on the coasts, lots of frustration and lots of anger, and hampering development, which we sorely need in these towns to create employment. So now this, we've been hearing about the setback lines for a long time. Some municipalities have got them, some haven't. So if we could get clarity on that one, please. Still on oceans and coasts, the monitoring and evaluation program developed and implemented, well, that I'd like to see that, because monitoring was severe, was found wanting last year in May, when we had the illegal trawlers off the coast, the illegal fishing off the Eastern Cape coast, and we had to rely on amateurs, fishing amateurs, to find those vessels, which embarrassed the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, because this overlaps with environment and DAF, I know that. There is a serious overlap with these things. I'm going to go to Dr. Preston, it's environmental programs. You were quite quick with your percentages there, but what I'd like to see is, where are these things happening? You know, we talk about number of youths from which provinces. Where is this happening? Who's benefiting? Is it all in one province or where? All of these things, I think certainly your presentation, Dr. Preston, I think, you know, the number of initial hectares of invasive plants, there's a number there, but it means nothing because we don't know where the action is taken, who's following up on invasive aliens and which provinces are actually doing a good job. Program 7, this unlicensed waste disposal, that is a serious thing. And I don't know, I'm new on this committee, but I don't know how much, I'm sure there's been a lot of discussion on this. But there are many, many municipalities in breach of this. And we hear that they don't want to comply because they can see extra funds because of this, it's going to cost them. Well, I tell you what, if they don't comply, they're going to face legal actions that are going to cost a lot more. And certainly where I come from, the Eastern Cape, I know of a couple of court cases on the go which are going to severely test local municipal funds because they're going to lose. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Manuel.
thanks, Chair. First, let's acknowledge the fact that the department did perform the report as presented to us, including the finances, as audited, does show that at least there's some work that is going on. And particularly, I'm happy with the fact that the transfers are done in good time and there are no issues probably there. So that's great. I will just try and ask questions as I have them, but probably there won't be that many, but I'll run through the programs. Firstly, under administration, when particularly around Songi Dialogue Game Reserve, which is a transfrontier conservation area, what governs that? Is it their parks board or is some parks national or under which agreement were you following all that? Because it may be under a provincial parks board, or what governs that situation? The second is that there are targets that we have got in terms of transformation, women getting into senior management levels and so on, when we surely know that those positions are occupied, and we then say it's difficult to reach that target. But we have set the target anyway, knowing that there are own bodies. Whether you hoped that people will die or people will resign, you know, because it's like you can't achieve, or you set it hoping that you will come to give us a reasonable explanation that nobody died and therefore could not, or no one vacated those particular positions. The other is, with regard to the security risks, the target is 90%, meaning 10% of the security risks will not be attended, which may be dangerous to the institution or the organization. I'm not hoping for an answer on that one. My view will be that DG, probably we need to just target 100% if at all possible. Just close all loopholes, all gaps in terms of security so that we leave no area unattended, because that means that there's a gap there for any challenge. The last one under administration, Chair, on the service provider that was terminated because they couldn't perform. apparently you said you terminated them in the third quarter. It does raise questions whether they were credible in the first instance. Their credentials were thoroughly checked to ensure that they will be able to do work, or whether necessarily they did something and paid, or paid and not done nothing and were to be terminated. And whether as you replaced them by the Human Science Research Council, were procedures followed, or you just took it that the Human Science Research Council is a credible organization and therefore just unpicked them, or you followed the procedures that were required. Under legal authorizations, compliance and enforcement, I just have got one question, particularly about the stakeholders which were consulted or met on shale gas. That is known to be a controversial issue. My question there, Chair, will be whether it's now about a smooth going area. Have all people come to understand that it needs to happen, or we're still facing challenges as a country? So if you could just share with us or update us in that regard. On climate change and air quality, and I think another one, whether that will be biodiversity or it's under environmental programs, there are training that go on, either a four-day training or whatever kind of training. Why don't we consider a situation where these people who get trained receive real qualifications? So I guess this will be certification of attendance afterwards, if I'm correct. And if not, I may need to be informed. Because if people come and get certificates of attendance, it generally means nothing. It's not like they've undergone serious training that you can then claim or be satisfied that performance in that regard will happen. And I do share firstly on biodiversity and conservation. As a department, you had targeted to establish 10 sustainable natural resource-based enterprises. You achieved 8. But my question there will be, perhaps you need to inform us in which provinces were those, and whether you find land easily available, because there are challenges of claims all over. Are you doing it in state land or in community land? Are there no challenges? Are there no issues? So it's easy for you to just do those enterprises without difficulties. But I was saying on environmental programs, I do share the issue of the questions here by the Honorable Member Padam, as to exactly where are these issues and so on. If you're planting all these trees, whether you are planting them where you have removed invasive species or whatever, which may then tell exactly where these things are happening, but where are these trees? The last one, Chair, is two questions under chemicals and waste management. The first regards the asbestos that is in 3 major provinces. I think we may need to be reminded which are these provinces, and I think we are also delaying tackling this matter, because soon it may be at some time bomb, and you don't need that. Yes, there may be no such huge resources or funds available to attend to it, but we must start doing something in that particular regard before we have got a challenge on our face. The last one, you know, in most departments, like education, in the past, basic education and higher education and training will be one thing, will be under one department. In some provinces, you will have health and social development in one thing. And when you do that, you end up having one sector suffering. Either there's biasness towards the health issues and social development will suffer until you separate them. I'm not arguing for separation now under this program. I'm saying we've got chemicals and waste, and it seems like they were biased towards waste management. Chemicals may be suffering. So I'm saying we need to be able to attend to both and then do the work that may be required so that on both there's some management that we need to be doing. So let me stop there. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. Just a few things from my side. Most of the questions have already been asked, so I'm not going to repeat. On oceans and coast, there is the national framework for on marine spatial planning has been approved. Is it possible that you can brief us on this as soon as possible? Because it is one area which we had some engagement with when we discussed in the Antarctica. So would like to receive a briefing on this one as soon as you are able to do that. Climate change and air quality. There is a National Climate Change Response Bill that has been developed but has not been published as yet. The discussion document was supposed to be published after public comments following the May 2016 Intergovernmental Committee on Climate Change workshop. So May 16 was almost last year. So it should by now have been published so that we can be able to look at it and make comments if necessary. I particularly would like to see this bill because as a committee we have somehow came to appreciate the fact that for us to tackle the issues of climate change we require legislation. We don't require a framework, a policy. We require a law that will deal with climate change in totality. So I don't know whether this bill responds to all the challenges around climate change. But because we have not seen it, we can't comment on it. But we really need the climate change legislation. So I hope this bill seeks to respond to some of the things that we need to do around climate change, because for us to be able to implement the Paris Agreement in its totality, we need some kind of legislation. And I hope this is speaking to that. Don't know, biodiversity, conservation and administration. And probably something that SANParks might have reported on, but I think it's the duty of the department to deal with this rhino poaching, which has reached endemic levels. We continue to say it has reached endemic levels, but we seem not to come up with something very radical to address that problem. We have called for the introduction of legislation on wildlife crime to address in particular this problem of rhino poaching. And I don't see it being emphasized on in the presentation. In our program, we have identified the date where we are going to look at and receive briefing on the possibility of introducing legislation to deal with rhino poaching and other wildlife crime. And I wonder if the department would like to comment a bit on this issue, which we have raised even previously, including in our colloquium. On chemicals and waste, there is three draft industry waste plans that have been reviewed and the department has received inputs. It's lighting, e-waste, paper and packaging. I don't know, I would like to get an explanation what informs the identification of these waste streams. And why plastic is not part of this. Plastic for me is not to undermine these other waste streams, but plastic for me is it's one waste stream that I think attention must be given to it. With all the problems that we have been having before and some of the issues that we have raised in the past. So I would like to find out why plastic is not part of this waste, industry waste management plans that have been developed. And of course, the unlicensed waste disposal facilities, I think colleagues have spoken to this one. It's really unacceptable. You know, when you determine the targets, it must be targets that you are able to achieve. But it appears that from here, where you plan to license 57 unlicensed waste disposal facilities, and it doesn't seem like seven final basic assessment reports and four scoping reports. I mean, it doesn't come anywhere near to what you intended to achieve. And hence, we had a problem with a long explanation, because the minute you are not able to attain whatever your targets, then you start telling us stories. And the stories will be more and more depending on the level at which you have not achieved. So why do we still have this kind? I mean, with the kind of experience that we have accumulated, we shouldn't be setting targets that are unachievable. And of course, the colleague spoke about the asbestos, which continues to be a problem. So those are just my questions. Second bite, Honorable Khade.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for your kindness to allow me an opportunity. Chairperson, there are a few issues that the colleagues haven't raised, so I won't repeat the other issues that we already said. The first one, Chairperson, are we winning in extending our EEZ? I remember last time we were applying to have our EEZ extended, so I would like to get more info on that issue. The other issue, Chairperson, this thing of less respond toolkit that has been rolled to 40 municipalities. Why 40 municipalities when we have more than 278 municipalities in the country? Or is it because of the resources then in the next financial year they will deal with other municipalities? I would like to get clarity on those issues and why those municipalities were identified. And then this strategy, as well as this biodiversity management plan, We'd like to have, as agently chairperson, the presentation on those two is a strategy on the monitoring of the air monitoring stations. I don't know how to say this. The strategy that has been developed to monitor the air monitoring stations, we would like a briefing on that, as well the biodiversity management plan, because it also speaks about the issue of the rhino poaching, which is a bad part in the country. So I don't want to dwell much on that issue because you've already raised it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think let me just ask the question which Dr. Scott has prepared for us on coastal effluent discharges. It says you have completed a review of the National Coastal Effluent Disposal as per the plan, which is commendable. However, one wonders what is the magnitude of these coastal effluent discharges from land-based activities. In particular, what is the magnitude of the coastal effluent discharge in our coastal environment? How many effluent discharge source point sources are we talking about? Which are the major coastal areas mostly affected by these effluent discharges? Who are the culprits in these cases? And what are we doing to reduce such pollution of our coastal waters, which are important for ecotourism, fisheries, resources, and marine biodiversity? Thank you, DG. On whom must answer which question? I noticed some of the questions might require, they require a lot of details, so you will respond as much as you can. The statistics and stuff can always come back later. You can always respond to that in writing, if possible.
Thanks, Chair, and thank you to the honourable members. The colleagues have had, I will just quickly answer some, and then the colleagues would fill in. Firstly, let me just remind honourable members that this is the annual report for 2015-16. Mm-hmm. It is not 2016-17. So when it's that anomaly that we table reports August or July, August, September, and then you process them. But they are always for the previous financial year. So 2016-17 will be tabled mid-year this year. Just that clarity. So one, I think Honorable Khadebe, I'll deal with your first question. It's a difficult issue in respect of the public entity. We provide, those are legal institutions. They appoint CFOs and they've got financial management divisions that are supposed to manage and deliver according to the resources that are appropriated by Parliament. So the department only sits on the audit committee. Our CFO attend the audit committees of the entities. Beyond that, we don't have a direct responsibility to make sure that and we don't see the financial statements until they are submitted to the Auditor General. We've had discussions in terms of where we are aware there are problems, how do we then discuss possible solutions. And in this case with Sandy, there are DG bilaterals with the executives, but in the main, the principal is the minister. And then when they meet with the minister, they then outline how they deal with the corrective measures flowing from the matters that are raised by the different authorities. One, they do have internal audit function, so they should be able to assess their controls. And also part of what has worked for us as a department and some of the entities, both sand parks and weather services initially when they had their problems, because it's not like we all did not have problems previously. We've then had the formalization of, you call it what, interim financial statements, and the Auditor General then kindly provide time in their plan during the course of the year to test your and assess whether you will then be able to adequately deal with the challenges. So if SANBI this year, if the AG can quickly then look at the interim financial statement of this year, then we can then assess whether they have a recurring problem in terms of the preparation and improvement of the quality of the financial statement. So that's an action that we can follow through, but I honestly cannot fully take responsibility, legally and otherwise, for the quality of the preparation of their reports. But we can attempt to work in partnership just to assist where it is possible. Then the other question which I would want to respond to is where we have targets that are not met, and we then give all kinds of reasons here. I'll give you a few examples. Mostly those areas, these are not our core functions as a national department. If I start with the example from the Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Edwards around the project on licensing unlicensed landfill sites, I think the DDG always runs away when she has to deal with things that he has not done and he wants other people to explain. It is a provincial competence, it's not national. So the department ended up having this project because in terms of the outcomes, outcome 9, which is led by cooperative governance, indicated that there is a challenge with licensing of landfill sites. Firstly, the process is, for a landfill site is existing in a municipality, it's an asset of a municipality, it's not a national department asset. If all what we did was to analyze the status of all landfill sites in the country, and our report from that audit indicated a really bad picture, and then the next question then was, what then can the department do to assist municipalities and provinces to then make sure that the authorization happens, which is then how we arrived at trying to get funds. The Treasury does not, in the normal course of process, appropriate funds for us to then provide that service. We look at different areas, including the donor funds. So we had access to some funds, and we then said we would begin with this project. And we appointed consultants. Firstly, the municipality must submit an application to the province as an authority that will then make a decision to authorize or not authorize that landfill site. It is not DIA that gives the permit. It is still the province. So we fund the support, which is the technical consultant, that must then help the municipality to make sure that they have authorized and licensed the landfill sites. So we had a number that we prioritized, and that's how we then got the target. But it is not fully our control to make sure that they submit the applications in time and make sure that the province makes the decision in time. But MINMEC has then been attending to this matter. And in the other area also, even in respect of the asbestos, this is a project that we had a target and were pressured by this committee, not us. So we responded and had a target without having funds for it. And we then negotiated, and during the additional funds submission to Treasury, we're hoping to get funds. They did not give us funds, and we had to reprioritize within the budget. And the only year that we're getting funding from National Treasury for the asbestos is this coming new financial year. So that's the context for those areas that we have the targets. And then I would give over to, and then let me also explain the donor funds, Honorable Member Ross. We had a slide that showed which is, where do they come from? We have the government of the Germany, which is called GIZ, which funds, which gives us funding both for climate change response, a monitoring and evaluation system set up of for us to respond to climate change and meet our international obligations of reporting. We have funding from the Australian government around a land sector measurement, which is partly in the biodiversity field. And we do have funds and also in-kind support from the Norwegian government, both for the greenhouse gas inventory, but also some of the oceans and coast research work that involves Earth observations and other related activities. USAID is an implementing agent, and therefore we also have what is called Global Environmental Facility, GEF. We contribute to the GEF, and then we are able to unlock funds from the Global Environmental Facility, but based on a project basis. And we have the implementing national implementing agents being the DBSA, Development Bank of South Africa, and also SANB in terms of the Adaptation Climate Fund resources. So that's those are the sources, but we can always give you a written breakdown so that you are able to see this. Lastly, on shale gas, because Alf is not here as part of Program 1, he's supporting Minister at the other meeting. Cabinet made a decision on exploring shale gas. It was not environmental affairs decision. What we then committed in our annual plan or APP was to at least undertake a strategic environmental assessment based on the fact that we do have, there's evidence to the fact that shale gas can have serious pollution activities or outcomes, particularly on water resources and on soil. And considering then the Karoo area, we then said we understand that is an area that is very sensitive with very limited water resources, and South Africa is a semi-arid country. We then undertook that process, which is why we have CSIR compiling the scientific studies on behalf of the department with a public participation process. There are NGOs that are engaged in the process, and so we have an indication, for example, on the whether there are impacts, measurable impacts to our profile of greenhouse gases if we then have shale gas. Shale gas is still it's a non-renewable resource, am I correct?
Yeah, technically,
it's a fossil fuel, so we needed to also understand what could be the impact of shale gas. Compared, we know what the impact of coal is and other fossil fuels, and the part of the study was also looking at whether it would assist the country in mitigating its greenhouse gases. So that strategic environmental assessment report, once it's completed, it becomes a public document, and it is available. It will be available. Sorry. The other reports that are referred to, I think Shoni will talk to the Rhino report. Minister releases the report quarterly, and it is published, and it is also even available in our website. We have briefed the committee from various during various sittings on that report, and including the one on whether we would have trade on rhino horn as a country. That report we presented to the committee, and it is also publicly available. Lastly, honourable members, on CITES, the Conference of Parties, we were still planning in 2015-16. The Conference of Parties took place in Johannesburg, Sandton Convention Centre, this year in September, and the expenditure was starting in 2015-16, and then to be and also we had expenditure in 2016-17. If I give you the amounts, the state funded the hosting of the Conference of Parties, as we are a member of the convention in terms of the trade in endangered species. In 2015-16, we spent 34.428 million. 2016-17, we are still then going to finalize, but our allocation was around 53 million. And the city of Johannesburg contributed 20 million, and we will then be able to validate the final expenditure when we submit our annual financial statements for 2016-17. I would like to give Dr. Preston an opportunity to then outline and physically maybe demonstrate where some of the projects are located in the country. Thank you.
Thank you, DG, and thank you again, Chair and honourable members. Let me start off, before I show the map, of just the question was asked specifically of the Youth Environmental Programme, the 1,350 people. They are evenly spread across the 9 provinces in that particular case. But in most cases, we need to look at what the problems are that we're trying to address. And they run nationally, these programmes. So this is a map that shows the EP programs across the country. We have 14 different programs, and hopefully it will load in a moment. I'm sure we can make that bigger. anyway, so once I become computer literate, we have programs across the whole country for all of the 14 programs that we do run. I will show off my computer literacy in a moment with the next. I will, but so maybe just go back to the previous one. But what you can see is like the measles on that map there, that there are projects all over the country. But then if I may...
It's more than 14 of those countries. No, there are 14 programs and then loads of individual projects. very big one, but you can see how the colors change year by year and how the densification of investment steadily grows. All of these are the kind of factors to all of our programs that we have to put into the equation as to where it is that we're going to get the highest returns on investment while still creating jobs and employment opportunities.
Thank you, Chair. I'll deal first with the question on setback line. Setback line, similar to what the DG said, is the responsibility of the MEC and therefore the province. The setting up of setback lines is the responsibility of the MEC or the province. And what the department is doing is to help the provinces with best practice and trying to get the provinces where possible to do what is uniform. So that is the responsibility of national government. In addition to that, national government has the responsibility for setback lines in areas where there are marine protected areas. So that's the position, honourable member, chair. Then, chair asked that the committee gets a briefing on the MSP framework. We will indeed do that, chair, when the committee has time for us to do that. It is especially important, as I mentioned last time, there is a bill on the go, and it's important that we talk about the framework.
Maybe I can add one of the members just to that, Dr. Percentage of you. The MSP was full service processed by cabinet before the end of last year. However, cabinet decided to curtail all bills. They were not processed November last year, so cabinet meeting, it was already on the agenda, and now I understand it's about time for the first meeting, which is in February. Okay, so immediately after that, the meeting will be available for discussion and it's a deal, the marine special deal. Oh, okay, yes. In the last financial year, in 2015-16, we were doing the framework, and in 16-17, the bill, because that's what we used to actually arrive at the deal. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Then there was a question on marine protection. And here, just to state that various government departments have different responsibilities. So Department of Agriculture and Forestry has responsibility to monitor and enforce fishing laws. Department of Environmental Affairs, on the other hand, would handle what I've called pollution, for an example. And another department, maybe transport, will do something else. So our responsibility is, direct responsibility, is monitoring for chemical pollution or marine pollution. Now, the honorable member referred, if I understood him well, to a case where Chinese vessels got into the South African EEZ. And I would say that happened after the meetings, PAGISA meetings that were held in Durban, where a decision was made to coordinate law enforcement agencies better. And in my understanding, that was the first time that the Marine Protection Agency had worked in a coordinated way in order to apprehend those Chinese vessels. So we think that the work, or the PAGISA marine protection work, holds much promise as we go into the future. The EEZ extension, unfortunately, I cannot give very accurate information at this time, except to say there are three areas. There are those areas where the United Nations agrees with us on the extension, e.g. along the West Coast. There are those areas where work has not started, which is the EEZ around Prince Edward Island. Then there's an area along the East Coast where there is still doubt whether there's continuity of our EEZ. They have asked for more information. That area then can be finalized only when such information has been provided. Unfortunately, it's causing a delay in the areas where there's no problem, for instance, along the West Coast. The question on effluent discharges, Chair, we would plead to be given time to process that question. It is, in fact, asking the questions we ask, because what we are doing, we are reviewing what has been happening and whether the guidelines that were set up by Department of Water Affairs in 1996 are still adequate. So that is where we are. As soon as we have results of that, we'll be able then to present to the committee and say, we're problems here, there, and there, and there. And unfortunately, I cannot provide that information, Chair, right now. Thanks, Betty.
Can I make an addition? We do know from the land-based sources of pollution that we do have challenges of, for example, microplastics that are impacting the coastline and some of the species, particularly the sharks, which tend to swallow them and they then impact on the life cycle of that important species. So there are different interventions that are being discussed during our coastal and marine event last year. We were working with some of the municipalities and the shark sport to then create the awareness. But the awareness, when you create it along the coast, is not sufficient. Because partly the problem of pollution from land bases comes from far inland. So we still have to then interpret our strategy overall in respect of the waste management strategy to combat pollution from inland, which I think the chairperson in asking the question on why not prioritize plastics as one of the waste streams in recycling, and Mark is going to respond to that, but it is part of the prioritization, Chairperson, but Mark is going to respond.
Thanks, DG. Chair, yeah, thanks for the question. Plastic is actually part of the packaging plan. So when you talk about plastic wrapping, plastic beverage bottles and all of that, it falls under packaging, whether it's be packaged beverages in that or packaged products or whatever. So it's covered completely, Chair, in the packaging plan. Thanks.
Your other question.
So thanks, DG. The other question related to, I think, DG, you've covered the asbestos one and the unlicensed landfill sites. Sometimes it's difficult. The challenge is how much, to what extent do we provide detailed responses. I think the one Honourable Edward refers to, I think, the first quarter, which DG clarified, and then the issue of how do we increase waste diverted from landfill. And I think it comes back to the National Waste Management Strategy that deals with the waste hierarchy to reduce, reuse, recycle, and essentially to avoid waste. And the target here is diversion from landfill. And the whole notion of the waste hierarchy is to discourage landfill disposal. So we don't readily license landfill sites unless there's a need to. There's a very, very heavy pressure on companies, producers, demonstrating why there needs to be a landfill option. And the whole notion of what we call waste minimization. So this year we're starting drafting waste minimization plans, which are part of licenses, where a company must demonstrate to what extent in that year they have undertaken waste minimization projects. So over the period of time, we will come to a situation where, for instance, we will have a kind of a moratorium or a discouraging of landfills in the country. So we've been closing down landfill sites across the country. Many have not been reopened. Part of the unlicensed licensing project is actually to close down some of the landfill sites, and we have successfully been doing that. At the same time, just to give you an idea of our recycling rates, we've been doing extremely well on, as a country. Our paper recycling is at 66.7%, scrap metal recycling at 70%, plastic at 57%, and glass at 41%. So overall, our recycling rates are increasing year on year. And with the packaging, I mean, with the new plans, we'll even put more targets on how we force producers, retailers, etc., to recycle even more. Thanks, Chair.
Sure.
Okay.
On the climate change, what I want to leave now.
Okay. Thanks, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I had two questions. I think the one was around the climate change regulatory framework. The process, Honourable Members, that we have followed is the targets in the 2015-16 annual plan was to present a discussion document outlining the conceptualization of a bill. So it was not a discussion document with a bill. It was the discussion document presenting the objectives of such legislation and broadly the content of such legislation. So it was one step preceding the actual drafting of legal provisions. During that process, we received really quite strong comments around, and I don't want to call it pushback, but strong comments around the fact that we had gone directly to one possible instrument, which is a bill, and that rather what we should be doing is broaden our focus to look at what the possible legal options might be. And the reason for that is that climate change is such a cross-cutting topic. And it affects legislation of sector departments, provinces, local governments, so that to consolidate all provisions into a climate change bill may mean that we are losing opportunities for making recommendations on and on amendments to other legislation. So we have now done that, Honourable Members and Chairs. We have now done a discussion document that actually starts to present the legal provisions that outlines the different possible legal instruments. And that document is the document that we are taking into MINTEC discussion with sector departments, and discussion with stakeholders. So that is the next step. It starts providing the legal provisions. It's still a discussion document, and it goes beyond the option of a bill being the instrument. Ultimately, it could be an additional chapter in NEMA. It could also be a NEMA laws amendment, and it could also have recommendations on amendments to sector legislation, such as the water legislation, the SPLUMA, the agriculture legislation, etc. So, Honourable Members, we are making progress. We recognise the absolutely high priority of getting legislation on the table to guide our implementation of our climate change response, and we are seeking the best possible approach through the best possible instrument. And then
So basically, Judy, you have retreated from your intention to introduce a bill from that workshop. See, issues around climate change are always contested by industry, by a lot of people, and it requires determination to push through. So you did a workshop. After the workshop, you received comments,
comments pushed back, as you say. So you retreated from your original intention.
No, Honourable Chair, we did not retreat. What we did was we were asked to broaden our consideration of instruments. So we have now, what we're taking into the process are three possible instruments. Ultimately, it will be a bill, no matter what it would be. It could be a NEMA laws amendment bill, which would be an amendment, a bill that looks at amendments to the National Environmental Management Act and all the CEMAs that have a bearing, the specific environmental management acts that have a bearing on climate change, as well as a schedule that makes recommendations on amendments to other sector legislation. So it would remain a bill. It just depends on the most, the best strategic option, the best way to make the greatest amount of impact. So we have not retreated. We have got both options on, in fact, we've got three options on the table, and we're taking that through a consultation process.
Okay. Unfortunately, I have to leave, but I would like us to have a follow-up discussion on this issue.
Okay.
And I hope I'm speaking on behalf of the committee, we take these issues of climate change very seriously. And we think the best possible way to push forward, to commit industry, to commit everybody, is to have that legislation. So the more we delay it, the more we are not going to make this any serious the progress around. I think we'd like to engage on that, understand what is the thinking, and also give you your feedback. Because as you can see, we were not invited to that workshop. We didn't participate as a committee. Of course, it's still being discussed in the executive. So you're getting that feedback.
Yep.
But I know that there may be other departments in the executive which will push very strongly against that move. Unfortunately, I have to leave the DG, and Honorable Makubela will take over. But I think we require a follow-up discussion on this specific issue. Your team can continue to respond to other questions.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And yes, noted. And then, Honorable Members, there was a question around the... It was the Let's Respond Toolkit and the selection of okay, and the selection of municipalities. And Honourable Members, we use the Treasury document that does an analysis of the vulnerabilities, the economic, social, and environmental vulnerabilities of different municipalities, and we selected those municipalities that particularly are rated quite high in respect of social and environmental vulnerability. Thanks, Honourable.
The last part of the question, I think Honourable Kadem, yes, it is linked to resource community.
Yes.
So that when we get more resources, we can progress to more municipalities.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Honourable Member CG. You have responded to the Commission of Inquiry report. Suffice to say that, especially when it comes to the status of that, the summary, of course, will be made. It's available. It's not a classified summary of that, which covers all the areas that the Commission of Inquiry covered, your security, community empowerment, regulatory issues. I may not go into the details of that. But there's been associated studies that were referred to in the report earlier on rhino economics and status of rhino on private land, and also socioeconomic status of communities neighboring these protected areas. And the new one that we just received now is the review on the relationship between protected areas and neighboring communities. those are associated studies to that COI or Commission of Inquiry report, which only the rhino economics and the one on private land issues in terms of their rhino possession, those are the two that will not be made available because of the sensitivities of the information, which I think the committee will acknowledge. So that's where we are with the report. Honorable Chair, you did ask about the Songimvelo Nature Reserve, which is part of the Malolocha TFCA between South Africa and Swaziland. Of course, there are two levels of management or interaction. There are trilateral commission. The trilateral commission will have South Africa MP as the management authority of this part, Swaziland on the other side, their management authority. In that arrangement, there are programs and activities that are joint. There are programs and activities that are not joint that both parties will agree on that complement each other. The 4x4 trail and hiking that was referred to as one of the areas where the investors expressed an interest, it's but one of the initiatives along that. You are right, Honorable Chair, that there are normal common challenges, especially on our side when it comes to the institutional capacity, the funding aspect, and the speed within which some of this uptake gets implemented. Those are the things that, as DIA, in the interest of TFCA, we try to work with the parties concerned to make sure that they get resolved, and it's part of the continuous process. There's another level, which is the ministerial level, where the political intervention gets activated through the minister in Swaziland, the minister in South Africa, also looking at unlocking some of the blockages which are administrative and some of them management related. The Honorable Chair, you did ask a question around the resource-based natural enterprises that we're referring to. We said 10 of them, of which 8 you asked us where. We had 3 in Mpumalanga, Northern Cape 1, Limpopo 3, KwaZulu-Natal 1, Free State 1 each with Eastern Cape during that financial year, of which the Free State and the Eastern Cape had some challenges at the time. We follow and are guided by rural development and the Land Claims Commission processes on land that is being restituted. Some of it goes to a community, which then is a communal land and communal management through CPAs. The other one then comes in as land that is owned or redistributed, but is owned by individuals. The land owned by individuals is much more easier to work with in terms of this program. There are common challenges that not only affect the nature areas, but any other restricted land, especially when it comes to the CPAs and how they operate. Hence, part of the biodiversity economy interventions from the wildlife sector is to intervene in that area and make sure that there's proper capacity and the CPA dynamics are managed, but that's not easy. Of course, the operations of these areas will require this intervention to deal with the start-up processes, basic infrastructure, which is fencing and other things, and also game donation-related matters. So those are the main basic, but there are other issues that are informed by the potential of the area and the business case for the area, which is part of this intervention. The issue around the rhino poaching, I think Isham will come in when it comes to the question around the introduction of legislation, mainly reflecting on what the police are working on wildlife crime legislation. Suffice to say from our side that, of course, you know, strengthening of legislative intervention in that area would be helpful, but we'll leave it to Isham to talk to. I will talk to the last part, which is the BMPs. Honorable Hadebe, you raised this issue, but the way how you raised it is more like this need for more information in this space on the dynamics around biodiversity management plans. These are legislated interventions as per NIMBA. It's not only for species, but also for ecosystems. And this is a very interesting intervention in the sense that it's not only DIA or any management authority in government that will say this is important, something has to be done. The concerned people, as in private or anyone or any organization, can raise an issue to say we see this butterflies not being taken care of, or these species that are that find themselves, you know, driven to extinction. We get reports on an annual basis, on a regular basis from SANBI on species and ecosystems that will require immediate intervention. Through BMPs, we can then get external or other parties, stakeholders, to commit and get involved in the management of that. We assign a management authority, which can be whoever, who then reports to us on a regular basis, and we monitor that there is progress in that area. So those management authorities are appointed through by the minister and commit to manage, commit to report, commit to monitor, and then we'll interface with them on a regular basis. So there are things that we trigger ourselves, there are things that are triggered by others on species and also different ecosystems. So there are a variety of management, but we can talk to the details of that on which areas we've covered and which species, which ecosystems, and where, and who is managing, and what are the dynamics. Thank you.
Thank you, DJ and Chair. I will try to respond to, firstly, the question around the external evaluation study that has to be done in the service provider that has been appointed. There was a proper process that was followed in appointing and checking also the credentials of the service provider, and they actually started doing some work, the focusing and the planning side of the work, to which we paid. The project was valued at 9.4 million, the super project. So the work that they had done that we signed off on was worth around 200,000. Which we paid for. I'm just answering the question on whether there was any amount that was paid for that. Then they were to deliver on the next phases of the project, and this is when it was discovered that they are not meeting the requirement, that they are not delivering on the stage that was terminated the contract. A formal process was followed in termination of that project. In terms of then appointing, where we got to the Human Science Research Council, we followed the process again, and we had two possible service providers there. We had a CSIR and the Human Science Research Council that both gave in their proposal for the work, and upon evaluation of that and on the basis of the expertise, we found that we would be then able, the most suitable service provider would be the Human Science Research Council. On the other question, Chair, on SMS, women in SMS, no, it's not just to come and tell you that we aim to fire other people. It's a mandatory target on employment equity, which we are also required to report on every time. So because it's mandatory, that we then have to reflect on it long time.
So we would have changed our target before
we
said. Parliament and cabinet is forcing us to have 50% of the requirement. But in reality, for the department, even with the vacancies that have been available at senior management level, we could not, even if we were to fill the issue, every time we would still not make it. That is the reality that we have. Now, where do we say budget cuts? Because we are refining every guest vacancy. We don't know how to make it increase because we still have to meet the target of reducing the liabilities that also take in terms of human resources. So, and we are not meeting our targets that we have saved for us for next year. So I'm still saying for not meeting our targets.
On the other question was on the number of municipality officials or the councillors that are trained on waste management specifically. And this we work on the basis of needs that we have, with the identification of the councillors that are available for training. Because if we then have fewer councillors available for training, it will not help us to set a high number of councillors. Because it's not just training of everyone on waste, on all environmental management issues. This specifically targets the waste management
issues and it looks at the councillors that are available. The reason we exceeded our target is because we then had some councillors that we had already trained leaving and new ones coming in, then we had to train the new ones. That's basically what they did.
What then the issue was there. I think the other area that was reflected on was on load targets for public participation events and opinion pieces and the like. In the main for events, for public participation events, we are guided by the budgets that we have because to host events costs a lot of money, and I think even at the moment, the approach in the department is to try and consolidate some of these events and have fewer. So I'm just sensitizing the committee that while it's reflected that target is already low, we might be reducing that number because we're trying to say let's have fewer events but try and look at the impact of the events that we have as opposed to driving more events that we would have. The other area that was raised was on the security risks. Honourable Chair, the intention is to end up at 100% implementation of recommendations. We get these assessments done by state security every 2 years. So this was a rolling target for a 2-year period, and it looked in the main at how complex or how costly it would be to implement some of the recommendations that they would have made. But in 16-17, our target was to complete that 100%. So I agree fully with you. The intention is to always ensure that 100% of those recommendations are implemented.
The last question, Chair, I think, Judy, did you respond to the air quality monitoring plan? Monitoring stations, there was a question. And then the last, whilst Judy is thinking, the last one, Honourable Chair, because I think we've answered all the other questions. I think Honourable Edwards, in the end, also referred to carte blanche, whether whether our actions would be enhanced beyond the what is referred as carte blanche exposé. Mark, I can say that, Chair, certainly in respect of the accountability framework for the new plans. Right now, as Mark indicated, we already have the Minister published the pricing strategy after in concurrence with the Minister of Finance. Two, which was part of the transitional measures. Two, the Parliament has passed the money bill, which includes SARS collecting the levies for the different waste streams, whether it's the tire levy and the others. So as we then facilitate the transition, then governance is going to then help to improve our implementation plan around the various recycling streams that have been prioritized. Thank you very much. Judy?
Thanks, DG. The question and I think the request was around a presentation on the air quality monitoring network strategy for strengthening it. The response is yes, certainly. We're just still going through the MINTEC process. And once we've gone through the MINTEC, the provincial consultation and discussion process. Thank you.
And Guy, training of people?
Thank you, DG, the Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. All of our training that we report is goes through its certified training, so it's against South African education quality standard. We do have training that is also done that is not certified, that's necessary for firefighting or other aspects of our work. But the vast majority of everything that we report to you is actually qualified.
And thank you. Lastly, I think Honourable Ross mentioned the streamlining of environmental authorizations. That, yes, we can confirm that part of our target was informed by the need for quicker quality decision making. We have a program with water and sanitation around alignment of water use licenses and the environmental authorizations. But in the main on environmental authorizations, we are also the revised legislation enables that we use other instruments, because in the past we previously just used the EIA system as a catch-all kind of an instrument. Now we do have other instruments like the strategic environmental assessment, environmental management frameworks, which could then be used as a process that would then enable quicker decision making, especially in sensitive areas of the country. Thank you very much.
Thanks, DG and your team. Members, I take it that all questions were answered. However, usually members do make follow-ups on answered questions in case you're not properly or you feel satisfied in terms of the responses given. But I just want to remind you and the DG, the department, that there are issues that we said will need to be prepared and given to us later and discussions done. At that point, I was not active because I was not the chair. I did not write them down, but I know there are bills that we said we may need discussions or you need to make presentations later. There are frameworks that should still come where they've been developed and so on. There are developed strategies where we need to receive those later. And I know that in terms of questions that might not have been answered, where we needed a lot of detail or some statistics, we may still need to receive those that you can still prepare and forward them to members either by email or in a meeting situation. Now, we've got, in terms of the program, we've got between now and one to ask follow-up questions if we do have, and to ask questions that may be directed to finance or the financials to the department if we have those. So I'm just saying that if we agree with that approach, then that's how we can proceed till we conclude. It's not a must to reach 1 o'clock, but in the event there are issues, because 30 minutes for lunch also is not enough. But I'm just saying that that's what the program that we adopted states, and therefore we may need to move that way, unless if I shall have left anything. First, let me take follow-up questions in the event you needed to still pursue your questions before we get to the other issues. Apparently all questions were fully answered, and you agree with the approach that those that were not answered will still be answered later, and those that have referred to the bills and so on, DG, and whatever I might have missed, yeah, we may need to confirm those probably so that we are sure and they're recorded. Yeah.
Chair, I understood that the MSP framework, the MSP bill, once it's through cabinet, that is Marine Special Planning, the coastal, what is called National Coastal Information Report, okay.
I thought it's the effluent.
Is it effluent? No, there was National Oceans and Coastal Information under Program 1.
Oh, okay.
You remember?
Yes.
It's available. So that is, we confirm, I think the Honorable Ross was asking whether it's available and whether it was published. That was the question. So we did not, you did not confirm where it is, so you better submit it. Is it not better to submit? Honourable Chair, would you prefer a submission or just a confirmation that it's available?
We will provide a written answer, Digitax.
Yes, okay, we'll provide it. And then on the Rhino report also, for the Honourable Member, Ross particularly, and then the coastal, what's this, the climate change bill or legislative instrument, I think the explanation by the DDG was that it's not yet available. However, there is the discussion document and the kinds of input that we've already received, which we may then present and facilitate the discussion in order to enable the committee to provide us with views. That's what I understood, because it's not yet through cabinet. Okay. What was the other? All right, you can add.
Okay. And the reason I want to come in maybe is because I realized that maybe Dr. Maiti, so the question, DG, was on the National Ocean and Coastal Information Management System developed and implemented.
Yes.
And the question was whether it's finalized and it's there.
Yes.
And the response is the report said what was finalized is the requirements and architectural design. So the actual system is not yet finalized. So I was worried that then we're just going to write that.
Okay. All right. And then on the coastal effluent discharge, what the Honourable Member requires on
this? It was quite a detailed question that wanted specifics, quantities and things like those. We can provide answers where possible, but we cannot provide them just now.
I'm asking whether it should be a follow-up presentation to the committee or there could be a report. That's what I want to establish. So my sense is that we can brief the committee on the actual land-based sources of pollution, that whole framework that we have, and so that we then make you familiar with the kind of instrument that is existing.
Okay.
All right, thank you. And Guy can then give the prioritization. I don't think, I mean, it's better to actually go onto the website because they work in all of those areas. So I don't know whether the provision of the map and provinces and just indicating how many projects in each of the province, that would satisfy. Okay, so we'll then provide that list. And what's the other? I think that's all, Chair. That's what I understood. Let us quickly go. The biodiversity management plan. Did you require a presentation on it? It was responded. Thank you. So that's all, Honourable Members, in terms of what we should provide as a follow-up. That's what I understand is required. Thank you.
Members, are we fine with that? Is that what we asked for? Okay. If that is the case, it's okay. Are we now on the finances? In the event there's a question. We need to be allowed time to go to the slides and so on. We can do that.
Thank you, Acting Chair. No, it is again contractors on eradication on page 8 of the report. Contractors, eradication, alien vegetation. Again, I just wrote where, you know, which part of the country, which provinces. And then if someone could just explain to me air charter services, where are people flying to? I'm not sure of that.
Yes, Honourable Adam.
Actually, it's not a it's a question, Chairperson. It's just a concern of the use of the consultant. We need to be caving on that and use the money on the service delivery, on the programs with the entity. And I think that would be my concern, Chairperson, when it comes to finances. Caving on the consultants.
Perhaps that could be answered. There was a page on our slide 16 that showed how you accounted on the transfers, the reclassification of all that into goods and services. That's what you're saying is the current understanding between yourselves and the AG, meaning that if we are to continue monitoring you on that or you accounting on that MCS, this is what should happen. And that's what you're saying it should be continued with in the meantime until there's a further agreement or understanding in that regard.
Okay, well, I'll answer the ones that are within my control, and then the first one, Honorable Chair, or Acting Chair, the contractors, I think, again, this is part of what we said. Guy showed the map, then he can indicate, we'll provide that to the Honourable Member on where the project clearing activities are located. Air charter services, and I can allow further Dr. Mayeki. So for the Antarctic Island, Honourable Members, we do have, I think we presented, and you got an opportunity to go into the S.A. Agalas vessel, and which is an icebreaker vessel. Between that and the land where people stay when they are in Antarctica, stuff gets moved by the helicopter. That's why we then have those helicopter services that are accounted for. And then on use of consultants, we do have, again, the CFO team. They can talk to it as the people that are responsible for controlling that. Chair and Honourable Members, I would plead that you understand the need for us to still use consultants, especially now that we are told we cannot fill positions in the structure. One, the nature of the work of the department. There are areas where we've analyzed, and I think we presented previously, and we can update Honorable Members on which are the areas that we require the use of consultants as a department, and how that is explained. That we can do. But now, in light of the fact that we still need to provide some of the functions, and if I am continuously having to cut up to this year, we have cut up to how many posts? 86 posts, which we cannot fill. As they become vacant, we then do away with those positions because of the challenges. I mean, Treasury has given the notice to all departments. Each department must reduce the structure to manage the liabilities for the state in the current financial environment. And it is within the MTF up until 2019 that we have to continuously reduce. Our first reduction, CFO, is 50, how many this year, how much? 56 million? And next year, we're cutting 83 million. And 111 million. So for that, on personnel, not before, because we still have cuts on operations. So in essence, even when we look at the existing warm bodies, we need to get more warm bodies out of the system. And therefore, we will have to rely on some outsourced activities based on that. So we can come back and be more transparent in presenting exactly which are those areas where we
would use consultants in accordance with the current treasury prescripts. Thanks.
Gigi, I thought the question is more to say, is the use of consultants less costly than saving phone calls? But if that can be moved, I thought perhaps that's how I understood the issue, not to say you can't necessarily use them at all, but also to say where possible there should be reduction. It's a matter that should be attended to. I don't think it needs a discussion. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I want to also to point to one thing which will also reduce the overhead of the department. This printing of the documents. I think you need to care about it. Let's go
green
and use electronic device that you've got. That would be a good move as the Department of Environment Affairs. And let's show them and have it applied in the entire institution. Thank you, Chair.
Let's get those questions answered and then we'll be able to.
So, yes, we can try, and as long as the committee does not ask us to, there must be a resolution by the committee because we can't dictate it to the committee. That's the practicality of that. So I think, Chair, I was saying there is a contradiction with use of consultants versus having to cut the structure. So it is just, even if I can say that this job can be done with somebody who is going to earn 100 or 300,000 per annum, and I have to use a consultant for about 500,000 in this year because I can't abolish people. That is a reality for the next 3 years. But how prudent are we in that is what I was saying. We had presented previously which areas are critical for us to have professional services which are not permanent employees of the department, and we can then provide you with that presentation again when if needed. And then on the accounting slide 16, yes, Chair, I can confirm that this is what was agreed to between Treasury and AG, and that's what we were instructed to do, which is what we did. However, when after that we were told we were going to get this in writing so that we don't reinterpret the same things, and we have not yet received any written correspondence that confirms as such. But the AG is here to confirm whether then if we do exactly that next in this financial year, is that going to be sufficient?
I'll stick to the resolution that will need that meeting so that we avoid, unless if it's a quick one on it, because I'm just worried about this financial year already. Yes, so we don't need this kind of thing again, you know.
Thank you, Chair. I think that it's a bit complex, that we'll need to give you the background. I think it would probably be more beneficial for the committee for us to come back, as was suggested, and that we go through the details so that we can give you a better picture of what that entails. And then we will, in the meantime, continue discussions with management to make sure that we can also move forward on that before we come back to you. But again, as management said, there is some, they are waiting on National Treasury for some confirmations.
All right, I take it we have now come to the conclusion of this session. And members, we back here at 13:30 for it will be a different set of people will be meeting at that point. So the department is really released. Thanks for having come. And having made your presentations, everybody who's here, including the AG, we're thankful to your services or your cooperation. All of you travel safely to whatever destination you're heading to. Thanks, sir.
Okay.
Doc?
The question by Chile and the data.
Members, perhaps you may remain a little bit as the visitors or our guests next to us.
You're talking to Veronica, not to me.
Oh, you are still private.
Yes, baby.
I'll see you tomorrow.
No. Oh, yeah.
What's the next day we expect
yeah,
to do?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I'll go. I'll be there.
What
kind of
happens?
No, I send it
in me as well.
No, I remember in Pretoria, I think it was in December or November.
I couldn't be up on that.
Well,
I
think
I send it.
I think
they were.
I managed to bug them.
Hello, Louise. You sort of added a lot to the presentation.
Thank you.